Good morning. I want to welcome you all and thank you all for being here this morning. I see several visitors. It was fantastic to have visitors in class, and we're happy to have visitors now as we worship together, we praise our God together. This morning is a especially special morning. You're all familiar with the fact that I enjoy Sunday mornings particularly well. But this morning is a special one for several reasons. As Kyle mentioned, this is the closest Sunday to the 4th of July. Many have been setting off fireworks all weekend in preparation for Tuesday's event. And we're mindful of our country's past and its history. And we're aware of the freedom that we have in this country. And we're grateful for that. And certainly it is a blessing. But I hope that we're always first and foremost concerned with and aware of the freedoms that we have in Christ, the liberties that cannot be taken away from us, the things against such or against which there is no law, the higher things, the better things, remembering that our citizenship is in heaven, but also eating hot dogs is good. This is also a special Sunday because this is the first Sunday of our second half of the year. We're transitioning within our theme, talking first for the first 6 months about God in families, God in the home, God in that structure and the dynamic that He's laid out for us. And then now for this next 6 months, we'll be talking about God in the family that He purchased with His blood, God in the church, God in this family. And we'll be talking this for the rest of the year about how we ought to function with one another in a familial kind of way. This morning, I've given a lot of thought to how I want to approach this morning. And what I want this morning to be is maybe a little bit different of a sermon than we're used to, than I'm used to giving. I want this to be a conversation. I want to talk to you as my brothers and sisters, because that's the point of this half of the year, right? And when I say conversation, I don't mean dialogue. We're going to keep things decent and in order. This is still a sermon. Feel free to badger me with your questions afterwards. I do enjoy it. But this morning, I want to talk to you. I want to have a conversation with you. I want to ask you a question. It's one we've asked ourselves before, I think, I hope. Why are you here? In the pew where you are right now. Or if you're listening to this later online, why? Why are you here? Is it a habit? Is it just what's done? Is it just truth is the best reason? Good. Are you here because it's not football season, so there's nothing to watch this morning? Or because your team isn't playing since it is baseball season? Why are you here? Did somebody drag you? If so, thank them. Or remind me to thank them at least. Why are you here? Why did you choose here? You could be anywhere. You could be at home. You could still be in bed. Some mornings I think I'd still be in bed. You could be doing anything. Why here? And if you did get up and get dressed and decide that you needed to worship God this morning, why here? There's other buildings that have certain signs out front advertising what they're trying to do inside. Why are you here? Is it comfortable? I do hope that it is, but is that what brought you here? I want, first of all, for you to understand as we get into this morning's topic, that I can say the most fantastic things, not that me personally, but just as a person or just being up here, I could say the most wonderful things. I could make you feel really good about yourself. I could make you feel really bad about yourself, right? I could step on every toe in this room But none of what I say this morning matters, is of any spiritual significance if it's not done in love. So I want to start by assuring you that if I did not love you, I would not be here. So as we talk about why we're here, we talk about why we call ourselves Christians if we do. Why we live the way we live. I want us to think about that, but I want us to understand that I'm coming to you as a brother. I'm coming to you as a friend, as somebody who loves you and cares first and foremost about your soul. So I hope that this morning, whatever your habit is, as you sit in the pew, as our minds tend to wander to lunch or bills or other responsibilities or things that are coming up in the future, I really want you to engage with me, not verbally, but mentally. The title of this morning's lesson is Masters. Masters. We're going to look at a verse in Matthew where Jesus tells us that we can only have one. But our points are going to be that we need to choose our master. We need to choose one master. And we need to choose that master today and stick with that decision and recognize that that's what we're doing and that's what we're called to do. That's what we all do, whether we think we're doing it or not. Before we go to Matthew, I want to start in Joshua. Joshua chapter 24, leading up to verse 15, which is a verse probably most of us have somewhere in one of our houses, right? Or have growing up, or we have a relative who has this at least a couple places, right? And it's a good verse. But the context here, he's about to lead them in. And Joshua is speaking on behalf of the Lord, and he's done. Because after all that God has done for these people, even this early, they still refuse to devote themselves to Him. After all that He's done, after all that they've put Him through, they have the audacity to serve other gods. So Joshua says, enough of this. The Lord speaking through Joshua says, I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built. And you have lived in them. You are eating of vineyards and olive grapes which you did not plant. Now therefore fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river in Egypt and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your father served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. This is an idea. This is a concept that I think carried us through the first 6 months of this year, talking about God in our homes and the responsibility that we have as heads of household, as parents, to make sure that it's clear that in my house, we serve God. That's what's done. But what we also see here is that it's a choice. It's a decision. It's a commitment. It's not, well, today is for me, but tomorrow's Sunday, so it's all God. We don't get to do that. That's not what he says. He's not talking about today being the extent of the decision and its consequences. He's talking about today being when they decide whether to follow God or the other small g gods of what this land or that or whatever's around them, or for today's application, whether we're going to serve our flesh or our family physically rather than spiritually, whether we're going to put worldly things before God. Choose. Choose one. In Matthew chapter 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, right, Jesus is speaking, and beginning in verse 19, Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Do we understand? He's setting up a dichotomy here. We're going to get to the verse that he makes this big point that we're driving at. That's on our next slide. But look at what he's saying right here. These are your options. It is either lay up for yourselves treasures on earth or in heaven. It's either live in darkness or subject yourself to God's light. Those are the choices. It's important that we choose, because he goes on to tell us that no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. We don't accept this. This is not a politically correct statement. This is not popular to say that if you're not with God, you're against God. Who are you to say that? You don't know me. Right? That's what we hear. We hear, I have a relationship with Jesus Christ. That's all that really matters. I can go do whatever I want tonight. That's what we hear. We don't live in a world that accepts a single truth. We don't live in a world that accepts that it's one way or the other. But we live because we're created by a God who tells us that there is only one way or another. But see, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but sometimes I don't feel that way. You ever feel like you can do both, maybe just for a little while? You feel like, well, right now, sure. Sure, it's Sunday morning and I'm dressed nice and I showered and everything, and you know, I'm with these people who know me a certain way, so I'm gonna behave a certain way. So today, sure, I'm God's, but you know, it's not gonna matter when I go home. And that's okay, right? I'm putting in my time. I'm keeping up appearances. We feel like sometimes we can do both. But I'm gonna go ahead and throw us a bone here. I'll say, unfortunately, God says differently. He does. He says that it is one way or the other. You're either going to serve God or Satan, and that's how we really don't want to put it, right? It's either heaven or hell. It's either God or Satan, God or sin. We don't want to talk like that. We don't want to talk about that hellfire and brimstone option. We want to talk about heaven and maybe almost heaven, or maybe the outskirts of heaven. Right? Or they didn't believe in anything, so nothing's going to happen. We want to talk about those options. But those aren't godly options. Those aren't real options. The Creator of all things tells us that there are two options. There's two masters we can serve. And if we're not devoted to the one, we hate him. What is it to serve God? Let's say we're with those people that Joshua talked to, and they said, no, but we will serve the Lord, and him only will we serve. That's an awesome answer. That's fantastic. That's where we want you to be. That's what God wants you to say. And he wants you to mean it. But now, what does that mean? What is it to commit yourself to one master? Because what we need to understand about this concept of having a master and choosing to subject ourselves to this master is that it's a totalitarian rule. It's not from 9 to 5, this day, this day, and this day, and then do what you want. It's not that kind of servant. It's not that kind of master. It's a master who demands our hearts. A master who demands our minds. All the time. All the time. Everything that we do, we're supposed to do for the glory of this master. We're to do in his name. We're to do representing him. Denying ourselves 24/7. We don't think about it that way. We don't want to think about it that way because, well, that doesn't leave a lot of room for what I want. And that's the point. When we talk about serving God, I've made that decision. I say, no, but I will serve the Lord. Me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Jeremiah made that decision, and he tried really hard not to at one point. He tried to abandon God, and it worked almost as dramatically as it did for Jonah. But in Jeremiah chapter 20, beginning in verse 7, he says something fascinating here. Jeremiah 20, beginning in verse 7, he says, O Lord, you have deceived me and I was deceived. You have overcome me and prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all day long. Everyone mocks me. For each time I speak, I cry aloud. I proclaim violence and destruction because for me the word of the Lord has resulted in reproach and derision all day long. But if I say, I will not remember him or speak anymore in his name, then in my heart it becomes like a burning fire shut up in my bones. And I am weary of holding it in, and I cannot endure it. For I have heard the whispering of many, terror on every side. Denounce him. Yes, let us denounce him. All my trusted friends watching for my fall say, perhaps he will be deceived so that we may prevail against him and take our revenge on him. Can you imagine living in a world where you're a prophet? God tells you what to say to his people. And when you encounter somebody, your conversation starts with, thus saith the Lord, because they spoke in New King James. I guess that would have been all the King James. When that's what your conversation consists of, and your reaction to that kind of conversation is scorn, reproach, derision all day long. When every time you open your mouth and talk to your neighbors, they hate you for it. I think that I would probably find myself, and I know that I have, in my posh American life, found myself in Jeremiah's shoes saying, this is just too uncomfortable. I just won't talk about it. I'll just not say, thus saith the Lord anymore. These people know that I'm a Christian, and if they're really interested, they'll ask. You ever had a fire shut up in your bones? Not literally, I hope, but you've been excited about something. Growing up for me, that was learning a week in advance that we were going to Disneyland. Man, that was just the best. If you thought that you could control my excitement for 7 days and I knew that I was going to Disneyland, the happiest place on earth, you had another thing coming. And I would talk to my friends and I would say, I'm going to Disneyland next week. When this week is over, when this week is done, after school, after church on Sunday, we're going to Disneyland. We're going to be there for this many days. We're going to ride this many rides and this many times, and we're going to buy Mickey Mouse ear hats, and it's going to be just awesome. It's exciting. And then, you know, we find out on Monday, right? So we're excited for a week. And then, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, your friends at school are kind of sick about hearing about your Disneyland trip. You're like, guys, I know I've told you this before, but I'm going to Disneyland. It's going to be great. And you go through this spiel because you can't help yourself. And Friday, they were really cool to you yesterday. They were kind of avoiding you because you're talking about it so much. And on a Friday, you're like, okay, I get it. I get it, guys. I'm not going to talk about Disneyland. I'm not even going to say that word. I won't bring it up, guys. I won't bring it up. I'm cool. lunchtime comes and you're trying to eat together and talk about stuff that's not Disneyland. Then you get to your recess after lunch or whatever and you're trying really hard. But it's a fire shut up in your bones. And you're like, today's the last day that I'm seeing you guys before I'm going to Disneyland. You ever been that passionate about something? Have you ever been that excited about something? I think the answer we should all share is yes, for one universal reason. And it's not at the end of this week or next week or the one after, for all we know. We don't have it scheduled on our calendars, but when this life is over, you can't believe the kind of vacation I'm going on. And it's a permanent vacation too. I'm not coming back. I'm retiring. And the benefits are just awesome. You wouldn't believe it. Guys, so I know that I've told you like 10 times in the last 3 days about where I'm going when this life is over. But it's heaven. I'm going to be with God forever. All right, Trevor, we get it. We get it. We know you're excited. That's cool. We're not into that. Just leave us alone, please. Okay. All right, I'll try. A couple days goes by. Guys, it's been a couple days. In case you forgot, I'm going to heaven when this business is done. I'm going home. I hope that you're here because there's a fire shut up in your bones. And you can't get enough of being as close to God as you possibly can. That's what it looks like to serve God. Did you know that? That's what it looks like. It's a fire shut up in your bones that you can't hold back. He redeemed for himself a people, purified for himself a people zealous for good deeds. That's what he created. That's why he bought us. That's why he redeemed us. To glorify him, to praise him, to worship him, and to tell everyone we can. Because, you know, there's a lot of differences. First of all, before I go into this next bit, there's a lot of differences between that Disneyland trip and our trip to heaven. There's a lot. But one of the big ones is that when I was telling my friends about going to Disneyland, it wasn't an invitation. I wasn't saying, hey guys, so next week we're going to Disneyland. You should totally come. I might have wanted to, but my parents would probably be pretty mad. When I tell people, guys, when all this is done, I don't know the date, but when it's done, I'm going to heaven. I'm only telling you because I think you should really check it out. You should buy your ticket. Definitely. It costs a lot. It costs your life, actually. But, oh man, it's worth it. You know how we know it's worth it? Because he tells us, he describes faith for us. And if somebody asks us what faith is, maybe we're at a point where we can quote or we know to look at Hebrews 11, right? When it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the evidence for things not seen. We read that and it sounds pretty much like it's the inspiration for how Webster's describes things. It sounds kind of dry. Assurance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Okay, that sounds a little formulaic. But if I understand that the faith that I have, the obedient faith that I have in God as the Father of Jesus Christ, through whom he's adopted me as a son, and if a son, then a joint heir. If I understand that faith means that these things that the Bible says isn't just something fanciful that may or may not be. It's assurance. I don't think I'm going to heaven. I know that I'm going to heaven. I know there is a crown of righteousness laid up for me, and not only for me, but to all who have loved his appearing. I know that. That's not cocky. That's not because I'm a better Christian than most people. I'm not. It's because I have a promise. and I take it on faith, and that means that it's an assurance. It's no longer just something that I think about, I hope for in any earthly kind of sense. I know. And you should know. We know that if we've put on Christ and we continue to wear His name, we're going to heaven. What if you've gotten to that point where that fire shut up in your bones was something you were really determined to suppress? I think I've been there. And it's like when you have an itch, but you're doing something formal, or your mom is really, you know, picky about fidgeting or something. And so you tell yourself, it doesn't itch. It doesn't itch. It doesn't itch. It doesn't itch. And then I'm going to start thinking about something else, because you have to replace it, or else you think about how it's not itching. And now not only that itch itches, but now you have another itch. Right? So you lie to yourself. And you say, it's not there. The pain, the discomfort, it's not there. I don't really feel that way. I don't really feel it. The fire, it's there. It's warm, but it's not that bad. I can do it. I can keep myself from pestering these poor people one more time. I don't have to talk about it anymore. In fact, I'm going to pick up another hobby that we can talk about so that I'm not tempted to bother them, to bore them with heaven, my trip to heaven. But no, it's not that exciting. I don't want to think about it. We can live with that lie for a while, and we can live with that lie for a while, and eventually it stops being a lie, doesn't it? Because suddenly you realize, you know, maybe you see something on TV, or you hear something in a conversation, or you overhear somebody else talking about God, and you're like, oh, I remember that feeling. Is any of it still there? Nope. No, it's cold now. What do you do about that? Because you decide what to do about that. You decide that, okay, I need to get back on this horse. I need to get this fire kindled again, pronto. Because I remember why I was excited. I remember that was about heaven. And I know that if I'm not excited about heaven like I'm supposed to be, if I'm not zealous for good deeds, if I'm not actively living a godly Christian life, then I don't have anything to be excited about. In fact, I've got plenty to be terrified about. Because if the fire is gone from my heart, it started somewhere else, and I'm gonna lay in that for a while. It should be a fire. It should be a fire. That's what it means to choose God. It doesn't mean showing up here whenever the doors are open or whenever your kids don't have something more important going on. It doesn't mean, you know, picking, you know, this over a job every now and then. It doesn't mean superficial things. It's a mindset. It's devotion. It's serving a master forever with all that you are and have and think. Otherwise, we're lukewarm. Revelation 3, we know the passage. He's talking to the church in Laodicea, and he says, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. Because you're lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. That's what God promises us. So if I've let the fire go out, first of all, consider that it's worse for those who have been in a saved relationship and then left it. It'll be worse. Second of all, understand from this verse here that it's better if you were all the way cold. Those hardcore atheists who are completely polarized, Because there's that polarity with religion, right? There's us, hopefully, on the fiery end of the spectrum, and then there's those cold-hearted people who have just completely shut God out of their lives and any semblance of God. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. They think we're stupid and we're brainwashing possibly intelligent people, and we should just all stop. Pick an extreme. Because if you're happy in the middle, God promises to spit you out of his mouth. You have the ability to choose. He gives you that because he's a loving God. And he doesn't want robots. It's nothing special if you can program a robot to obey you and do what you want. That's, you know, we have one of those in our pockets, and most of the time they cooperate. That's not really that special. But if you create people and you give them the choice to love you or your enemy, how ecstatic are you when they choose you? The final point I want to make this morning is why. Why choose God? What does this all come down to? Okay, so we're choosing and we're either going to be hot or cold. We're either going to serve God or Satan. What's our motivation? Sure, heaven is nice and all, but you remember that stuff Jeremiah was talking about with that reproach and derision all day long? It doesn't sound fun. There were a good number of people in the New Testament, and in the Old for that matter, who were stoned. They threw big rocks at them until they died. Throughout history, the persecution has continued. There's a lot on the line when we're making our decision. There's a lot against our decision to follow God. But you know what he did to motivate us? He paid a price we can't imagine. Let's think about birthdays. Yesterday we celebrated Evangeline's first birthday a month early and her cousin's first birthday a month late. And you know, the presents, the gifts, you know, it's a lot of fun. And so imagine it's your birthday. And there's something that you really need, but it's way beyond your budget. There's no way. Even the people that you know, maybe they're set, but they're not that set. But you'd need it. It'd be really, really useful for you. And somebody spends what you know is way more than they have any business spending to make sure that you have what you need. If you have grandparents, that's not too difficult to imagine. Imagine unwrapping that thing that you need most but could never get for yourself. Opening that up and saying, oh, cool, what's next? You unwrap it, but you tuck it in the corner, stuff it in your closet, and you never get anything out of it. How would that feel if you're the one who bought that present? You know how much they needed it. You know they could never get it for themselves. How ungrateful, right? Isn't that ungrateful? It's abhorrently ungrateful. That's what we do to God, though. Because if we want anything other than an eternity of suffering and misery, we need something we could never get for ourselves. He went out of his way. He suffered. He experienced pain. The Creator. The one being who transcends any semblance of pain. He experienced pain so that we can have life. Are you grateful? Are you grateful for that gift? How are you showing it? Hopefully that plays into why you're here. And if it doesn't yet, hopefully it does soon. Hopefully the reason that you wear the name Christ is because you're grateful that he spent his life for you. And you're excited about what that ticket gets you into. If you're in need of the invitation in any way this morning, if you've not been grateful or grateful lately, whatever your need is, if you've been lukewarm, maybe you've lost that fire, it does happen. I don't know anybody who's not experienced that at one point or another. But it's something to remedy, and it's something to work on together and to grow together and build one another up in love and to stoke one another's fires, if you will, for God. So whatever your need is this morning, we invite you, we implore you to come forward and let your wishes be known as together we stand and sing.